Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast for July 30th, which means that this is the last one before my birthday month kicks off.
Birth month.
I'm going to be celebrating my birthday for the whole month of August as per usual.
I thought the most important thing that month was our anniversary, not your birthday. But...
Well, they're both very important. I think it's a celebration of our love and myself. So I think I can do those two things at the same time.
It's going to be really expensive math.
Yeah. I mean, I just... Yeah, it's a lot of celebration. I love my birthday. That's not what this podcast is going to be about today. Because we're still in July. So we're not kicking off the 4 weeks of podcasting about my birthday. Just kidding, we're not doing that. We have three topics this morning. We are going to talk about... We're going to describe beforehand what it's going to be like to rearrange our whole house and move all the children into different bedrooms, swap out bedrooms. We're going to talk about what kind of food you should eat to indicate the gender of your baby and your gender reveal. And we're going to talk about the Catholic Church. Those are our three topics today that we thought about in advance.
Right.
Which one would you like to do first? I think we should go from dark to light.
Okay.
Because, you know, otherwise we'll cry through the rest of the day. So I think we should start with the depressing stuff and move forward, don't you think?
Yeah, that sounds good. So, you want to introduce the topic, or shall I?
I think you should, because you've read more about it. I mean, I have read a lot, but then I kind of petered out because I stopped being able to sleep at night, actually. I read some things, and then I was physically unwell, and so I woke up in the middle of the night. So, I think you should start off.
Well, Cardinal McCarrick was told to, step down, basically, and... He now is...
He's not going to be a cardinal anymore, right? Like they...
Which is the first time that's happened. I think it's the first time it's happened for disciplinary reasons for,
like almost 100 years.
Right.
The 1920s or something.
There was someone who stepped down voluntarily for another reason, but I think he just disagreed with the Pope. But this is the first time for disciplinary reasons. And because they... Mayor Carrick was being investigated for sexually assaulting a 16-year-old boy, and then... Those charges were found to be credible, and then other people came forward, and apparently it wasn't just the abuse, but there was a systematic, hidden kind of homosexual life that this cardinal was living out.
That involved a lot of
under
other
the guise of his holy orders and holy duties. Apparently, he would even move to. onto the grounds of a seminary so that he could carry on relationships with young men as they were coming into the ministry and being trained for it. I mean, just imagine this cardinal, or this someone who holds basically supreme power in the Catholic Church, using that to seduce and have sex with young men trying to get into the ministry and wanting to get into the ministry and
basically corrupting them from
the get-go. Yeah, basically corrupting from the get-go. I mean, I don't have any homosexual leanings at all, but apparently it didn't matter to McCarrick. He was after everybody, and he would try to seduce who he could, and if he liked you, he would invite you to his cabin, retreat house. Apparently, he had these parties where he'd invite seminarians to go on a weekend, quote-unquote, retreat with him. And his retreat house, had a certain number of beds, and he'd always invite...
More people
than there were beds, so that the leftover person would be required to sleep in his bed.
Wow.
Yeah, and if they didn't get enough people to go, he would cancel the whole retreat. if they only had enough for each bed, then
it wasn't worth it.
Then it wasn't worth it. So it wasn't just the child abuse, which is the most egregious part of it, but also just the systematic sexual, just the sex going on everywhere, hidden
wherever
in plain sight.
Was.
I mean, if this is what was going on, how many people must have known about it? Seminarian after seminarian after seminarian, many of them probably now bishops, and then, or some of them now, at least now bishops, many of them in orders, being taught to be preyed upon, being preyed upon by older men in authority, and then learning that behavior and carrying it to their parish. It's just nasty. It's so unbelievably sick.
How old is McCarrick? Like,
he's 88.
He's 88.
Yeah, he's 88. And so the worst thing about this is that, not the worst thing, but one of the bad things is that the diocese where he worked, I believe it was Newark when he was bishop there, or archbishop, paid off two young men.
When?
A long time ago. Before he became cardinal, I believe, to keep quiet. And so his proclivities were known. I mean, it wasn't like this was a secret. It wasn't like nobody knew McCarrick was an abuser and also someone who actively pursued relationships with homosexual men. I was reading an article by Dreher.
Yeah, he's been covered. Rod
Dreher. And he was talking about how this is... the homosexual relationships within the clergy are just widespread. I mean, everybody has boyfriends. Not everybody. Lots of people have boyfriends. Bishops, priests. And that's making it more difficult for...
people to come forward.
For them to stamp out actual child abuse.
Yeah.
Because the child abuser...
Has
secrets about the...
Everybody else. So you can't deal with the pedophilia and the... molestation of young people because everybody is compromised, which is really, I mean, astonishing.
It's also, you know, the every time the connection is drawn or the apparent connection is seen between homosexual desire and pederasty, I mean, people scream, they get upset, but it's there. There's a connection between homosexual desire and the predation of young men and boys. And every time it pops up everywhere. So this is a rock that's beginning to be rolled over and a lot of nasty things are going to come out. And we were saying yesterday, if this could dramatically reduce the size
of the
Catholic in America, anyway, maybe in Europe, I don't know. I mean, it just
seems like it's not very big
the beginning
in Europe anymore.
Of a massive.
Well, Rod Dreher's article last night or yesterday was I think he called it the 8 minutes or something. You know, when if the sun were to stop, you know, being a ball of fire, it would take 8 minutes before the earth would be in sudden and complete darkness. And that's how the end of paganism was at the end of the Roman Empire. It would, you know, there were still, you know, way towards the end, there were still sort of traditional, intellectual, classically trained pagans. And they thought that everything was fine and there would always be paganism. And then suddenly there was no paganism and they were caught off guard. Of, you know, the whole world had just sort of become at least culturally and intellectually Christian. And it's like night just suddenly fell on paganism, you know, a long time ago, obviously, and now it's all back. But that's kind of how he thinks religion is in the West, which I thought was interesting because I said yesterday, this really does feel like the apocalypse, like a sudden darkness falling over so many segments of the church worldwide, not just evangelicalism, which is facing suddenly, you know, the sicknesses and death throes of mainline Protestantism. And now,
yeah, remember when the back Catholic in 2001, 2002, when the homosexual heresy started working its way through the main lines, the evangelicals were thinking, wow,
that's never going
to
happen.
That's never going to happen to us. And now here it is, you know, and it's pastor by pastor is falling, church by church is falling to this. And we thought, yeah, okay, well, this is a particularly Western kind of heresy, but it's skipped over. And there are increasing number of people, even in Africa, Christians in Africa, who are embracing it, adopting it.
When you join it together with the prosperity gospel, you get just like
it's just
weird sickness, basically. Right. A spiritual sickness that's just overtaken everything. It's like night just suddenly falling.
We were talking about the prophecy that Jesus gave, that the God will send a strong delusion. That will fool even the elect if possible.
If and it possible. What's horrible is that it seems like it's this really seems like possible.
A worldwide delusion. It's a sexual sin and immorality embraced that seems to be pervading every denomination, every Christian group. That's what kind of what we're getting to. Okay, so what happens ultimately in the Roman Catholic Church if it's finally unearthed and uncovered in a public way that, you know, thousands upon thousands of priests are having sexual affairs with other men? What would that do? Would that mean the Rome begins to soften its stance on...
That's what I thought. I mean, I think at that point, Rome has to say, well, it has to rethink its theological stance on homosexuality.
Yeah, I mean, it can't.
It has to.
We can't reverse its stance without some really fine dancing, because it's part of their. I think it's part of their de fide kind of understanding of marriage.
But it can undergo the same rethinking, evolving, reimagining, revoicing. Evolving, revoicing.
Yeah.
Okay, you said it, but I thought it was really interesting that, you know, evangelicals were watching the Revoice conference and Catholics were watching Cardinal McCarrick. And I'm not saying that the Revoice thing was anything. There are faithful people at the there were faithful people at the Revoice conference. There were, who were Orthodox on this issue. But the
I
fact
say
that
Orthodox,
it,
but.
Well,
Orthodox in the sense that they agree that you shouldn't have sex. And the whole Revoice conference, the baseline was, if you have sexual urges toward people of the same sex, you shouldn't act on those. So that's the Orthodox.
That's Orthodox.
Right.
But they're trying to reframe the issue so that there's a little bit of room about identity, Christian identity, that includes other kinds of desire, I think. And it makes me really, I don't know if the word is anxious, but like, that's the word, maybe.
Well, classically the idea is, okay, well, sexual desires that run anywhere apart from either, or apart from the opposite sex and are disordered. So if you want to have a sexual relationship with someone of the same sex or someone of an opposite sex who's younger or in your family, or those are all disordered sexual desires that have arisen from the fallen nature. So you categorize them as sin, even though you may not have chosen them. They are sinful in their essence. They're not part of who you are as a person, because they're not part of the created order.
I mean, they are part of who you are in your unredeemed,
in your fallenness, right?
Fallenness,
right?
And they may go on being part of who you are until you die. But once you die, they aren't. When you go to heaven, that's not going to be part of your
right. So some within the Revoice at the Revoice conference, and some within the Spiritual Friends movement, that's when people who are kind of recategorizing homosexual desire. Some of them can be categorized into the same, the spiritual friends grouping. But yeah, they want to say that the longing itself for intimacy with someone of the same sex is not
disordered. And then
even to the point of having
you have to define intimacy. Yeah, and like you kind of do some gymnastics about that, right?
Right, like, because the what makes that unique? Because we all have it. I have a desire for friendship with a person of the same sex, a friendship, but not intimacy.
Evangelicals have used the word intimacy to get over having to use the word sex. So, like, you know, when evangelicals are embarrassed about having to talk about sex, they'll use the word intimacy. Mm-hmm. And you know they mean sexual desire, and right. It's supposed to be in the context of marriage, like you're supposed to have intimacy with your spouse, and you can laugh in this high, shrill voice when you're talking about it, like cackling, because you're so stressed about having to even talk about sex. And so taking that word in an evangelical context and then using it in same-sex relationships, muddies the water. And
well, okay, so West Hill says there's three or four levels. So the top level, or you have full-on erotic desire for someone, okay? And I think he would say, okay, that's wrong. We shouldn't have those. That in itself is a corruption of something good. Then you have attraction, like where you just notice someone's attractive and you're not sexually necessarily looking for any kind of engagement with them. And then there's this kind of desire for personal intimacy with somebody, right? Just to be a friendship of some sort with the person. And the second level of recognizing someone's attractiveness is where a lot of the debate is. Is that sin? Is that part of it? And then the third level below there is connected with it, you know, is that so if you want to have a really deep friendship where you're attracted to the person, not in an erotic way, but in a, boy, this person's really beautiful.
Has
a beautiful soul. And also you want to be friends with that person. Where do you categorize that? My thought is that a lot of people who are following this are self-deluded. That if I, as a married man, told you, man, I find so-and-so super attractive, and I'm going to hang out with her because I want to have some kind of intimate friendship with her, but don't worry, sweetheart, because it's not erotic in the least.
Yeah, no.
That's maybe there is, like in heaven, this ability to do that.
Right, because heaven is going to be a completely different category, so you're only going to know people better. You're going to know people in a satisfying way. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. even, you know, I mean, I'm friends with women, and I'm enlivened by those friendships. I get energy from them. I am helped along. And I mean, you don't need friends.
No, you don't
need friends, but I do. I like having friends. I like being friends with other women. And, I mean, as in, you know, or being friends with my children, there's always a sense of dissatisfaction when you know another person because you can't fully know them. You know, you have conversations that are difficult. You miscommunicate. You don't have enough time. I mean, in all of my friendships, I'm too busy. I don't have enough time to hang out with people I want to hang out with. And, of course, you take that into a deeper way into marriage. There's a sense of deep dissatisfaction in marriage because you can't fully know the other person, and you really want to. So I think you can take that sense of longing that you have to know people and the different kinds of longing that they that they are. Those will all be satisfied in Jesus, but then as we are together with him, our longing to be known and to know other people is going to be satisfied, right? But I think it's really scary to muddy the different kinds of longing that you have, you know, and apply them, you know, not clearly
right
to the kinds of people that you know and that you have relationships with. And I think there's a deep, deep, deep set idolatry of sex in the American and the Western psyche that has, like in Silverchair, wound itself around like a serpentine winding of sexual idolatry around the mind of the Westerner. So much so that when you suggest the only place for sexual desire, the only place for sexual desire is in heterosexual, within the bonds of heterosexual marriage. I've said that a couple of times in my blog, and I've thought, this feels ridiculous to write this down. Like, this is absurd, you know, because everybody's out there on Tinder and, you know, it's fine. I mean, I don't think it's fine, but there's an absurdity about saying the only place in which you can ever have sex with anyone ever is within the bonds of heterosexual marriage. There's nowhere else that you can have it, period. And even within the church, you should not have, no man should have sex with any woman outside of marriage, period. No.
But what if I just want to be friends with her and I, you know, I don't get the same kind of, I don't have the same desire for intimacy with you that I have for her.
No.
And but it's not sin because I'm not wanting to have sex with her.
Yeah, no.
And what if we got a whole bunch of other guys who felt the same way and we had a conference to celebrate this kind of desire for friendship that
I
we
mean,
have
I,
with women outside of our marriages?
I understand the longing. Where are we? I understand it. And I
that,
grieve.
But that's
a, okay,
thing,
I agree.
Right?
I have some grief. I understand the deep longing. I understand how terrible it is, how lonely it is, how desperate it is.
You're talking about the revoice thing right now.
Yes.
Not me, right?
No, not you. No, you. No. Okay, and I mean, look at the. You've got young men who go to devote their lives to Jesus in the Catholic. They go to seminary. And I mean, there's something, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing
men.
That it's inside of the church. It's like, because you, in it's such a sickening, desperate, terrible fall away from having your longings satisfied in God. In like the most perverse, sick thing that you can imagine, it just illustrates almost the horror of our fall from being satisfied with Jesus. That we are not satisfied with Him. We are not. Man, every single truck in the world is kind of
just stopped.
I think you should go look, because are they digging up our road right now? Seems like our whole road, perhaps. Because they drew lines outside of our house. Is it all just garbage trucks?
No, they're taking down another tree.
Okay. Well, let's close all the windows. Well, don't just stand there. What tree?
I don't know, but there's a big...
There's a truck coming up next to our house.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you don't have to worry about... trimming our tree, because maybe they're going to do it right now. Oh my gosh, I hope they don't cut down our trees.
Well, it looks like they're doing their trees.
Their trees, okay. I think we should return to the topic at hand. Can you?
Yeah.
But of course, you know, we thought we had plenty of time, because...
We're starting early.
And...
It's a private company, it's not the city, so they're probably just trimming their trees.
Okay.
Fine. They can do that.
No, I don't know. I mean...
Anyway, so we've been meddling all over the subject, haven't we?
Yeah, I think we've joined everything together.
But it is a larger... I don't think... I think this is the tentacles of sexual sin just are are just they're like you say, wrapping themselves around every denomination in every region. You have that. I think the revoice thing is a subtle way for Satan to divide evangelicalism
around the question of sex. I mean, okay, because it just, like, I had some real grief over the weekend because there's some people who are at the Revoice conference who I know to be Christian and love Jesus.
Sure.
And, like,
I don't doubt that.
I like them and I'm friends with them and I've been helped by their lives and their writing. And then I had other friends who were so angry about the Revoice thing that they were, like, flailing with anger almost on social media. And so people I know who both agree about homosexuality were fighting with each other on, and, like, it's caused a rift within people who have been on the same side of this and who have been faithful, like the faithful witnesses of people who are same-sex attracted, is suddenly, like, sort of under attack. It's under attack, and I was so grieved. I just felt sick all weekend, but I would say God is sovereign and good. We had a Sunday off, and we went to a really nice little Dutch Reformed church here in town, and the pastor preached an incredible sermon about contempt being filled up. It was on Psalm 123, that the wicked, you know, we're satiated on the contempt of the proud and the ungodly, but the God will get the last laugh, which I thought was a really helpful line.
Yeah.
And then he prayed for the Catholic Church, which I was so moved by that. He prayed sincerely and hopefully and honestly for the church, and it was really helpful. I mean, I don't, because we're in a sudden darkness, and only the light of the gospel can pull us out of this very dark mire.
It's so confusing, because if you're just the average layperson, and, you know, you see people who you know and love who have same-sex attraction, and on the one hand, you want to be compassionate and love them, but if those people are also saying, well, we think the church accepts this kind of behavior, or recategorize this desire as something that can be, that is good or created, ordered, and then you hear other people in the church reacting against that. I mean, I can see I can see how easy it would be just to say, oh, come on, let's just accept this, let's just go forward, let's talk about the gospel, let's talk about mission, and miss the way that this sexual lie kind of will seep in and sap not only that person that you love, but also the foundation of the church, and dominant denominations will crumble or split or divide. Rome is headed for something. I don't know what, but it feels very apocalyptic, doesn't it? I mean,
yeah, it really does.
Yeah.
I mean, it feels apocalyptic. You know, the one thing that we said all the time when we were first going through we were beginning to leave the Episcopal Church, and we were trying to articulate why we had to do that. And we said over and over again, one thing that's really important is our love and our pastoral concern for people who are same-sex attracted.
Right.
And we had those people in our church. We had people in our church, and still do, who are same-sex attracted.
Mm-hmm.
And we are anxious for them. We want them to be saved. We want them to know Jesus. We don't want to hinder them at all, and we can't possibly lie to them about the scriptures or the character and nature of God, or the law and the gospel, we cannot lie about that. Because of the people that we actually know, it's not theoretical.
Right.
It's deeply personal. And the whole Episcopal Church is, well, we just need a pastoral response for same-sex attracted people, by which they mean we need to include, we need to just accept those people and love them and give them hugs and essentially lie about what the scripture says.
Right.
Is unkind. It's not pastoral. It's a terrible thing to do. It's a morally bad thing to do. That has to still go on. I mean, that has to still be where we are. The Christians have to say what Jesus says. And if you can't say that,
you're being cruel.
You're being cruel.
Right. Right. But that's lost on the average. I mean, it's not lost when you talk to somebody about drug abuse or drug addiction or something like that. You say, look, you've got to tell the truth to your friend who's addicted so that they don't continue. Like other sins, I don't think it's lost. But for some reason, when it comes to sexuality, the idea that that someone's deepest desires for love and intimacy can't be met is something that people can't.
It's too terrible to fathom.
Right.
And so nobody fathoms it anymore.
Right. And I think there's a backdoor way in that Revoice is trying to figure out, so that you can kind of make peace with these desires without acting on them. And and begin to identify yourself with them in a way that ultimately destructive.
Yeah, that's ultimately destructive. I mean, I hope that unity is again found on this issue in evangelicalism. I'm just praying desperately that the fissures that seem to be arising are actually not there, or right. that we can have a witness right. again. But I'm anxious about it. And I'm anxious about the Catholic Church.
There's two things happening at the same time. The McCarrick thing in this is interesting. And not because of the child abuse so much, because the just pervasive homosexuality in the Catholic Church also. I mean, that Roger Hare article is so fascinating.
Not in the Catholic Church. In the...
Clergy.
The clergy.
Right. Well, you know, it stands to reason, though. I mean, if you're a same-sex attracted person and not worried about controlling yourself, not caring about controlling yourself, and you know there's a place where young men go who will not be married and who won't seek marriage, and who are smart and are wanting to dress up nicely in robes, the Catholic seminary is like a target. I mean, it's where you'd want to go. So I mean, and some seminaries just have become inundated with men who are just looking for a life of sexual satisfaction with other men.
In a place where they will receive honor. And
so there's some, I can see, and not necessarily looking for abusing children, but just for being with other men, and apparently. Within McCarrick's, under McCarrick's rule and under some other bishops, there were seminaries and whole orders given over to not even really the hidden celebration of that kind of life. So.
I mean, Lord have mercy.
Yeah.
That was the other thing about the service yesterday. The pastor stood up and said at the end, like three times, I think, Lord have mercy. It was a really interesting ending to
a
service.
He used a lot of Anglicanism. He's a lot of Anglican prayer.
Oh, I know.
Prayer.
He used like the confession was Anglican, but he just stood there and said, it was like a public lamentation. It was so interesting.
Yeah.
And I don't know what else we can do. Actually, I don't know what else you can do but just publicly lament. and beg God for mercy, because there's no human way out of this, actually, unless God wants to rescue his own church.
I guess it's important to look at ourselves, too. When you look at your own heart and mind, it helps you have compassion for this, because I see things that I would love to make peace with, that I would love to kind of say, well, this is just who I am, and not fight anymore.
It's exhausting.
I mean, the fight against sin is, well, so insofar as we fight, which is not always something that happens, it's exhausting, and it's not really a joyous fight.
No.
Until you're finished. See, if you actually overcome something, the joy comes. But when you're in the middle of trying to put it down and ride herd over it, especially something that just is an ongoing part of your personality. And I have that. I'm an addictive person. I have always been someone who, when I like something, I can't just have a little bit of it. I have to have the whole thing. And so that's a constant thing I have to work on with anything. I mean,
donuts.
Yeah, donuts, alcohol, whatever it might be. Whatever it is, if I like something, I'll go full hog, all bore, and I don't get sated, which is a problem. And it's not fun.
To always be
saying no,
trying to control yourself.
Right.
Always. It's not, you don't go to bed at night and say, well, that was, I overcame that today.
Right.
You're back at it the next morning without any break ever. And it's spiritually exhausting, and it makes the Christian into a weak person, but that's the way it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. The Christian is supposed to be weak and dependent on God to such a degree that they never wake up one morning and are understand that they've arrived at the good life.
Until heaven. Right.
Well, as long as you're waking up every morning
here,
then yeah.
then it's not going to happen, right?
So
it makes, because we were talking about in Christian Ed last week, we were talking about heaven and hell, and it's so hard for us to really perceive what it will be like when we don't have sin in the mind and in the heart. I mean, because it shapes the way we think and do and act and speak in so many different ways that we don't even know about. To imagine being free of that is just...
It's kind of beyond human imagination.
Yeah, yeah.
You just really can't understand what it will be like. So, and this, the tragic thing, I think, culturally, is that I think Christians used to try to imagine that. That used to be part of the spiritual... life was an imagination of heaven,
right?
An imaging of heaven that you could long for and hope for. And I feel like in many ways that's not a part of the Christian landscape anymore. It's very much what will we have now, what will we do now, who will we be now, and not what's coming later.
Yeah, I think we said this before, but on the right, the far right, charismatic, not right, but the far charismatic Pentecostal side, the need to bring heaven to earth now is one aspect of that heresy, where you just, we've got to have the treasure and the health and the prosperity that God promises us when Jesus returns right here and now, and we get that by accessing it through the power of our faith words. And on the other side, the left, you have we've got to have the social justice and the peace and the equity that is promised in the kingdom of God right here and now, and so that's the church's job to bring it and to succeed in saving the world. But there's, every sin, I think, has that element of wanting heaven now.
Yeah,
we need to have all the feasting of the heavenly banquet present,
or we can't deal, and so we cannot deny ourselves.
Right,
we can't live out the entirety of our lives as the cosmic marshmallow test, which is what the Christian life is—the marshmallow test. And you have to say no to the marshmallow
all
your life long. And then when you die, you get both the marshmallow and a second marshmallow.
Does everyone know what the marshmallow test is? It's like they put the little boy in
You put the little kid in the room for 15 minutes sitting in front of a marshmallow. And if the child doesn't eat a marshmallow for 15 minutes, at the end of 15 minutes, that child gets a second marshmallow. That marshmallow and another marshmallow.
But if he eats marshmallow, he only gets that marshmallow.
He only gets that marshmallow.
Right.
So that's what the Christian
life
is. I love
the kid who like put the marshmallow in his mouth.
Yeah, and took it out. And like for a whole 15 minutes. By the end, it was like this soggy mess, but he did get a second marshmallow. I felt like that was kind of right on the line. But like you're not supposed to take it and put it in your mouth and like put it back on the plate. You're supposed to let it sit on the plate. That's what the Christian life is. That's what, I mean, and we, whatever it is, whatever the marshmallow is, sex. Mainly that's the big one right now. Mm-hmm. You have to say no. You have to keep saying no. And to the deepest longings of yourself, even for human relationship. Like, to some degree, of course you should need to have human relationships now. And you need to be in community and you need... you also have to acknowledge that the deepest kind of relatedness that you'll have to another person beyond sexuality will also not be fulfilled.
Here.
Because if it is, you will devour that person. Yeah. You will devour yourself and that person. You won't actually be knowing them if you insist on having it now.
So, you know, it adds a little bit of interesting. When I was a new Christian, I used to wonder, now, if we're going to have a communion meal, why don't we actually have a meal? Why don't we have actual plates with food, with a loaf of bread that we each get a loaf of bread. And we each get a bottle of wine, or, you know, half bottle of wine. Okay.
Okay.
And
have
an actual meal. But the spareness of the communion meal, I think, points to this reality that we have.
It's only a taste. It's not the whole thing. You don't get to have the whole thing. That's really painful. And you sit in church week after week unsatisfied, dissatisfied, sometimes lonely. And filled with longing, you know, it's like being always engaged and never married. Right? That's the picture of scripture. Right. You're forever engaged and you're talking long distance to some degree. You're frustrated, you're sad, but if you insist on
having the full joy of marriage
right now,
before you're
married, you've ruined it.
Yeah.
You've ruined it.
Which we do every day. We sin.
That's what sin is.
And we find out that it's not the joy that it could be, you know.
So then we try again. Wake up, try again.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah.
Well, so, you know, I guess thinking about that enables you to have more compassion for people who are really trying to figure out how to deal with this desire that won't be
satisfied
even in heaven. I mean, the desire for same-sex sex won't be, but the desire for intimacy will be.
First of all, your desires will be sanctified, so you'll want good things, and then you will get to have them.
Right.
You know, just you're not going to lose out. You're not going to be missing anything. You're not going to be missing anything. I just like to maybe this conversation
became more coherent as we went on.
Yeah, I think that's
at first
good.
We were like spattering all over the place.
Okay, well, it's so big and so awful. I don't know what to say. But
well,
I just
want
to say, like, too, that I would further extend the glories of heaven to the person who's been abused. I can't even imagine. A child who's abused by
little boy,
a member
just
of
wanting
the clergy,
to be an acolyte or something,
and then living his whole life with a broken sexuality and a broken relationships because of what somebody inside of the church did, somebody purporting to be speaking for God would do, is so awful. And yet I have to say that God is sovereign over that, and that He is merciful, and that I think every Christian in the world should pray for the person who's been abused, that God would restore what the locusts have eaten, that God would give it back, God would make it better, that God would save that person, every person, woman, child, man, whoever has been abused by a person in the church, that God would sort that out all the way to the end and administer justice and mercy. I don't know. I think if we prayed, maybe God would listen to us.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, he'll listen to us.
Yeah.
But maybe he'll change.
Maybe he'll rescue people. Yeah. Anyway, I think we should cheer this party up. Okay. And I was sent an article on, somebody tweeted me to say, please talk about this thing. There's an article on the Gospel Coalition that's not technically wrong. It's a fine article as far as it goes.
You just don't like the way it's written. You have issues with that. You can agree with something, but if it's not written well, you have a heart.
Yeah, so I don't like it. It's badly, well, I don't want to say it's badly written. It could be written a lot better. But the part that I think is irritating Twitter is that the author of the article was going, his wife was going to have a baby, and they wanted to have the gender revealed to themselves. And also, can I just quibble here? Isn't it that you're having a sex reveal? Because you want to know the sex of the baby. Gender and sex are not exactly the same. And everybody says gender reveal, but I'm pretty sure you mean the sex of the baby is revealed. Anyway, don't answer that question because you don't really know the answer.
No, I do. Sex and gender are always connected, though.
Yes, yes. But, like, grammatically. Right. I think grammatically, gender means writing, more. Use the word. You're having a... Right. You're finding out the sex of the baby.
Right, but sex reveal sounds different. I mean, we're going to have a sex reveal tonight.
Well, I know,
then.
But I just...
Okay, that wouldn't I wouldn't say that.
They decided that were going to have two options for dinner, depending on the ultrasound. If it was a boy, they would go to the local artisan sausage and beer hall. If it was a girl, they planned to dine at their favorite all-vegetable restaurant. Are you kidding me? Like,
and
there's
the first mistake.
This is the... Boys don't get to eat meat while girls eat vegetables. That's not...
They've got to watch their figures, though, for the boy.
Oh, man.
It's better for girls to be vegetarians.
So then he uses this to talk about the importance of sexual differences, gender differences, and how beautiful that is in the created order.
Which is true.
Yes, I appreciate the men and women are different from each other. That's a good thing. Just like... But this is part of the annoying thing. Just like sweet and sour are different, and... The ocean meets the land. Men and women are like, it's just like that.
There's a created bipolarity.
Yes.
In the world.
Okay, just don't say it like this because that makes me want to die. I don't. If this is how you're going to talk about the differences between men and women, then I can never talk about it, and then we'll never think about the beauty of difference in creation. In the contrast between light and dark. In the contrast between light and dark, who's dark
you're
and who's
the dark.
Light?
I'm the light. I'm the sun. You're like the moon to my sun.
Yeah. No.
I exude my glory and you reflect it into the world.
No.
It's the Bible says this, sweetheart. You are the glory of the man. Right? The woman is the glory of the man. And you know what glorifies you? Your hair. Your hair.
Okay. All right, well, this
So you're like my shining moon in the world. Can we talk about it that way? Like, can we use Bible language to talk about it?
No, I don't want to talk about it.
You're also the weaker vessel.
Yeah. This has gone badly, so let's move on. I just... No, like, food... Women can eat brats and drink beer. That's not unfeminine. When I'm drinking my Christmas beer, I haven't denied my...
In fact, you like beer more than I like beer.
We go out and you have a little frou-frou glass of white wine, and I'll have a good beer. Because you're watching your figure, and I don't care about mine. So, no, that's... Nah. I think when you find out what kind of baby you're having, you should just eat whatever food you like best, because don't think about the baby anyway. It's too...
Did we, when we were having babies, there were no such thing as gender reveals.
No.
And now, I mean, like, on Facebook or on Twitter, you have these pictures of... And they have some of them are really creative ways of revealing gender. We didn't do that, did we?
We also just... didn't know that when you got engaged, you were supposed to have a videographer come, and then that was part of the funny story is when the video person failed to get a good shot because you were in the wrong angle and the lighting was bad.
So everything has to go different. You have to do it all over again.
Yeah, and so then you'd be like, no, wait, try again.
Ask me again. Yeah.
Okay, well, I think we've solved that. Complementarianism, check. Some point I'm going to say everything I really think and feel about that subject, but I don't think today is that day. Because we have to rearrange the whole house.
Yeah.
We're moving into the attic.
Which is really fraught. I'm really worried about this.
And the girls are moving into our room. The boys are moving to the girls' room. We're moving the school room and the office around.
So that we'll have a guest room.
Yes. It's going to be fantastic.
And part of that means I have to clean out the garage today so we can put some of the junk from the attic
into
the garage.
Yeah, we're going to put all... Oh, my gosh.
And then we have to ultimately figure out how to do drywalling and insulation.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
Tomorrow.
Right.
We'll do that tomorrow.
Right.
Or next week.
Right.
We'll update our progress
next
week.
And we have to get rid of the bats upstairs.
Let's not speak of the bats. Until then, though, have a great week.